Hello everyone and welcome to this episode, the Trust One, of the Women Talking About Learning podcast. I'm Andrew Jacobs. Last time we heard about AI, and there were some interesting questions about what we should and shouldn't be trusting within that. This time, it's trust. It's almost as if we put the topics together on purpose. We were really keen to posit them together and to go through trust with us. We've two really great guests. Our first guest is Janet Webb. Janet is an independent learning and development consultant, developing management and personal effectiveness skills in the secular and the spiritual arena. Her thing is to help people understand their own brains and emotions so they can do the scary stuff, such as managing people or giving presentations. Janet can be a bit kooky at times, and she likes it that way. Our second guest is Leslie Rohonchi. Leslie is a distinguished integral master coach, specialising in executive coaching, leadership development, and high-performance teams. Leslie has a rich background in organisational development, human resources, learning and development, and corporate coaching. Residing in Ottawa, Canada, Leslie and her husband foster dogs for the Canadian Dogs for the Blind program. We recorded this episode at the beginning of February this year, so it had been a while since we'd heard it, and thoroughly enjoyed listening back to it. This is Women Talking About Learning. This is Janet and Leslie talking about trust.
So, hi, Leslie. How are you doing?
Hi, Janet. I'm doing really well, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. Tell me, how did you get into thinking about trust in the first place?
Well, it's part of what I've been doing for a living. So I'm an executive coach, working with leadership people and teams and whatnot. And it's such an important part of working, our working life. But I've also been a really curious person my whole life. And I've always wondered, like, what is it that we put out there that makes people trust us? What is it that we look for in others that shows us that we can trust them, right? Yeah, and I've always been so curious. What about for you, Janet?
This is an interesting one, because when I saw that we were going to be talking about this, or this was an option, then I was like, oh yeah, I'm really interested in that. And then I was thinking, why am I interested in trust? And I think probably I don't have a big depth of thought about this or breadth of thought about this, but I just really fancy chatting to somebody about it. A while ago, it occurred to me that trust is something that we talk about as if it is there or isn't there, but it's so much more subtle than that. It's on a continuum, and it's what you might have with one person in a certain situation that absolutely is gone in a different situation. And I've talked to a number of people about this, and I just wanted the opportunity to chat with someone about it, because it's. I wonder also whether COVID has sort of changed our perspective on trust, and certainly for organisations, has it changed the way they build trust within their teams? You know, particularly if their teams aren't working next to each other as much as they used to.
It's an interesting thing. You know, I think trust as a definition isn't one big thing. It's not, there isn't one definition. I think if you've got 1,000 people, you've got 1,000 different definitions, right? Because of their perspective, but also because they're how they're wired. So I like to tease apart the aspects of it. But you mentioned COVID, and did that change how we think about trust, especially in a working environment? And I think it's true, you know, with a lot of the teams and the leaders that I work with, there was a real struggle when we first went everything online, you know, when the pandemic first hit, because it felt like, how can I trust that my people are working? You know, how can I trust that they're really doing what they're supposed to be doing? How can I show them that, you know, I am trustworthy as a leader, that I've got them and their backs? And so people, people really wrestled with that. And I think, you know, over time we found ways to build trust online, we found ways to get really intentional about getting our teams together for really specific intentional things that build team trust and communication and whatnot. So I think, yeah, it's been a ride, this pandemic, hasn't it?
Absolutely, it has been a ride. And for people coming into the workplace for the first time, you know, who've never known anything different, really, that's, you know, sort of saying to them, right, we're going to do intentional things or arranging intentional things. And they may be thinking, well, why do I need to do that? Why do I actually need to go and meet with my colleagues? I meet with them every week online. You know, the whole thing about you can't actually look somebody in the eyes online. So I'm looking at my camera now. But if I look at my screen, then I'm not looking at my camera. So if I look into your eyes, then, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And you can't explain that to somebody. But the flip side, of course, is that you and I are chatting now on other sides of the world, practically. Which is just brilliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's awesome. You know, I worried at the beginning of the pandemic. I worried, you know, as a coach, am I going to be able to have that, feel that same connection and really bring people really more deeply than they've ever gone before? Am I going to be able to do that? And, it took a little bit of sort of navigating, but certainly I think we can be really effective. And that said, I also think it's really important to be in the same room, breathing the same air, you know, picking up the non-subtle or the subtle nonverbal communication, you know, that we give out as humans that show us, we show each other that we trust each other in really subtle ways.
Yeah. Trust is I talk about this sometimes with people about trust is very context specific, isn't it? So if you get on a bus or get on a tube train or I don't know, what do you have in there? What do you call your underground system in Canada?
Oh, all kinds of bad words that I can't tell you.
Oh, Andrew will tell us.
It's always down. It's always broken. Now, there's something we can't really trust here in Ottawa. I'm in Ottawa, Canada, and we've been having a hell of a time with our light rail system.
Anyway, yeah. So if you sat on a bus, then let's go with that. And there's nobody else on the bus, and then someone comes and sits down next to you, then the context of that is so specific that you will not trust that person, and you'll probably get off at the next stop. Contrast that with, I remember a number of years ago, I was getting on a tube train with my husband, and it was one of those times where there's something had happened on the line, and so the train wasn't moving, and so more and more people were getting on. And at one point, my husband and this woman, who were complete strangers, were absolutely pressed up against each other with their chins over each other's shoulders. And I felt so sorry for her. I mean, I know my husband. I know that he would not have done anything, but she must have wondered what on earth is going to happen here. I said, you know, I tried to break the ice and sort of say, I feel that I need to introduce them because this is about as intimate as you can get with another human being. But because of the context of that situation, it wasn't all right, but it wasn't freaky. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of forced intimacy just because of proximity, excuse me. And, you know, the close quarters that you're sort of forced into. Intimacy, I think, is one of the aspects of trust when we know somebody well and we can, you know that their intentions are good towards us and whatnot. But in that forced intimacy of those close quarters, it makes for a really awkward, artificial kind of an intimacy.
Yeah. I guess with intimacy, with that kind of situation, you're trying to guess. I mean, we as human beings, we always guess what's happening next. And so the thing about trust is that you're trying to guess the intention of the other person and what they're going to do next. And the more you know them, the better you are at guessing that. Which is why, you know, if someone comes and sits next to you on an empty bus, what you're guessing is very different from if the bus is already full and they come and sit down next to you. And yet they're doing exactly the same action.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes back to intention. And intention is such an important part of trust. And this is something that leaders really need to dial up if they're not, is expressing their intention first, right? Here is my intention in, you know, telling you this feedback that you need to hear, for example. Here's my intention in taking us this new direction in the business. When you express intention first, it keeps the door open a little bit, and it helps to build trust rather than take it away.
That's so important. And actually what occurs to me there is that sometimes people do those kinds of things and they don't realize what their intention is. So they may be giving some feedback without actually thought through, why am I giving this person this piece of feedback? What is the outcome that I'm driving for? What's my intention?
You mentioned, trying to guess the intentions of others. And I think with trust, there's that guessing. If we can develop those skills around what you're calling guessing, I like to think of it as being able to sort of crawl into the head of and look out the eyes of another person and to understand, what does it feel like to go through the world as them, right? What is it? How do they see the world? What are they, how does what they believe impact how they behave, for example? What sorts of things do they check as they're going to reinforce whatever belief is driving them forward? Understanding all of that, you know, by that simple act of crawling in the head and looking out the eyes of the other develops empathy. And I think that's one of those superpowers that if we develop, we build vulnerability-based trust, which I think is the most important type of trust. It's foundational, you know.
And yet so many businesses have been built by powerful people, not always men, but usually men who the idea of being vulnerable, the idea of allowing anyone knowing what their intention is, the idea of allowing people to crawl into their heads and build that perspective is just anathema. So how do we change a world that's already built like that? That, you know, this idea that to be the chief executive or successful businessman, businesswoman, whatever, you have to actually keep those cards really close to your chest.
Toughen up, yeah. I've got to be tough. I've got to have a persona. What they can realize, I think, through coaching, for example, but mentoring as well, and you know, doing a 360 and getting feedback and all. I think they realize that when they're being authentically who they are, that's what people trust. That's what people want to follow. That's what inspires people, for example, to stay at a company when they see that the leader is authentic, real, vulnerable. They trust that that leader will have the best interest of the whole cadre of people that they're leading as they go forward. I think that showing vulnerability, and it's hard for people. I see that so much. It's really hard for people to trust that vulnerability is going to build trust rather than kill trust, but it actually does.
Yeah. And do you, in your coaching practice, do you find now that the senior leaders that you're coaching are more open to that now, or is it about the same, or is it that those that are interested in
pandemic?
Yeah.
Like post-pandemic, pre-pandemic, is that the marker you're looking at?
Or post-Brené Brown, you know, and that whole movement on, come on, guys, let's just show who we authentically, you know, there isn't a job advert out there anywhere now that doesn't say something about.
Yeah. Well, you can't dispel this research. It's such a huge body of work. And Brené Brown, I mean, it's amazing what she's come up with. And she wasn't the first one. People have been writing about this for a long time. And I mean, the way she has put it together is beautiful. But there are so many resources out there about and research papers that prove that, you know, when you improve your leadership EQ, it becomes your superpower and your teams are more successful. Your employees are more successful. You make more money, all of that stuff that you're striving to be. If you're throwing up a persona, or you're not forthcoming with your vulnerability as much as you can. I mean, Brené Brown also talks about, you know, you don't stand naked in front of everybody. I mean, your vulnerability is measured and it's guided into the right direction.
It can feel, I guess, counterintuitive. Yeah, to be a great leader, you need to be vulnerable.
Absolutely.
And when we think historically of great leaders, you know, the people that we would consider to be great leaders through history, everyone from Martin Luther King to Hitler, you know, I mean, in so many ways, he was a very bad role model, but you can't get away from him being a leader of people, to sports leaders that have led, you know, failing teams through to victory. There is something in there that would suggest that being vulnerable as a leader would not be part of their skill set, their superpower, as you put it. Let's be clear about this. I totally agree with you. If you can be vulnerable because you're so grounded in yourself and so understand yourself and so accepting of yourself that you can be vulnerable, then that's a real strength.
Yeah, it's building those muscles to be able to let down the guard, you know, and take off those pieces of armor, as Brené Brown calls it. And if it's just one little piece, you take off one little piece today and you try a tiny little new move and just notice what happens. Just see, you know, how that impacts the connection between people, or how it impacts your willingness to step into a productive conflict with somebody that you need to get into a conversation with.
Yeah.
Just noticing. Yeah.
And that's back to intention again, isn't it? If you're having that conflict with somebody, but you're respecting them, then you can have that conflicted discussion and present your side, understanding that the other person has a valid perspective. Because your intention is to find a middle ground, not to destroy the other person. So it's really back to intention again.
Yeah, for sure. I use a coaching practice with some folks that are in conflict, and it's called the Just Like Me practice.
Okay.
Where and the whole intention behind this is to build trust when you're in conflict, and to help people find a common ground. And so it's kind of four perspectives. You say, just like me, this person doesn't want to feel uncomfortable either. Just like me, this person also loses it sometimes. Just like me, this person doesn't want to be disliked or judged or excluded or fill in the blank. And just like me, this person wants to have friends and intimacy, you know? So it helps to make that shift from this is me and my world to crawling in the head of and looking at the eyes of that other and saying, just like me, they also are trying to just do what's best. Yeah. And it's amazing how that little tiny shift in mindset makes a huge difference in trust.
I like that. I used a thing where you get someone to put a pair of chairs together and imagine, sit in one chair as themselves and imagine the other person in the other chair and sort of have a conversation with the other person. But then to step out of their chair and observe themselves sitting in the chair and seeing what they can see going on between the two. It's a similar sort of thing. It's about stepping outside and noticing what's going on and realizing that the other person has a perspective on this too.
And when that person does that step back and sort of observing from that position, what have you noticed about the ahas that they have?
Yeah, and sometimes those ahas come really uncomfortably. You know, sometimes people can stand there and look at that and say, well, you know, they kind of have to accept what's going on for the other person, but also they're having to accept things about themselves that they might have been avoiding. I've done a couple of times where I've then got them to step away from that and observe themselves, observing themselves, and
yes,
to see what they see there. And when they see themselves struggling with the reality of the situation, then golly, the learning has really happened at that point. It doesn't always work, and the individual, again, it's back to intention. The individual has to be willing to explore that about themselves, and you can't force that on people.
Yeah, that's a really important point in this learning environment too, and especially this kind of coaching that we're doing, is that people have to be willing participants. Remedial coaching does not work. It just doesn't. You know, you can't force fit it. Jenna, I'm curious to know your thoughts on self-trust, because to this point we've been talking about trust, building trust with other people. Any thoughts about self-trust?
Oh, now that is fascinating. So give me a definition of that, because this is something I literally have never explored before. So I'm happy to explore that now with you, because I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, I think it's such an interesting thing. I mean, growing our self-awareness is what coaching is all about. And you know, hopefully as we age and go through life, we build our self-awareness. But we don't often think about trusting ourselves. And so, you know, trusting our reactions or our motivations, or even trusting in ourselves enough to just try something new, right? That if this happens, then I'm going to fall apart and I'll start crying. Or, you know, somebody will think I'm stupid or whatever it is. And so how do we build that self-trust enough to allow ourselves to try to put a toe in the water, you know?
So is that courage? Are we talking about facing our beliefs and our fears about ourselves? And I suppose you would need to have some really good understanding of who you are and what makes you tick. And I don't know. Wow, you've brought me to a place of where I just want to go and sit in a dark room now and think about that for 15 minutes.
Well, same, right? This is what I'm thinking about recently, is the self-trust aspect. And I'm exploring it too, just like you are now. Like, you know, what is this thing that might be holding us back, especially as women, when we're conditioned our whole lives not to trust our instincts? You know, not to trust our right brain creativity because it might be seen as fluffy or, you know, not serious enough for business or, you know, all of those crazy messages that we get, not trusting our ability to get into productive conflict and hold our ground even, you know? So what is it that gives us self-trust? You know, how would I develop my trust in myself? And I think it's partly, you know, it's actions, it's self-observation, it's experimentation, reflection, all of that.
So I'm at a point in my life where I sort of feel like I know myself quite well. And that's a mix of going through certain different things and I suppose a learned practice of reflection. But I can compare that with how I was as a child and how I was up until my mid-20s, I suppose, which were greatly affected by certain things that happened in my childhood. And a realization in my mid-20s that having secrets from other people was not helpful. And I suppose what you're talking about is almost having secrets from yourself and the things about ourselves that we try to pretend aren't there or hide from ourselves. And the more we can unpick that, you know, what is it I am telling myself and where on earth does that come from? And what is it I'm not telling myself, not facing from myself, and why is that happening?
Yeah.
Whether this is a thing that particularly happens to women, probably yes, I'm hoping that's happening less and less, but certainly, you know, as a child there were certain jobs that were men's jobs and there were certain things that were women's things to do, and women didn't become chief executive or head up businesses or take risks because you have to be, you know, manly to be brave. Whereas women weren't, I think, encouraged to be brave. And so if you're trying something where you're going to have to trust that you're not going to fall to pieces, or trust that if you do fall to pieces, that will still be okay. How that fits in with a model that perhaps I was given as a child, it's quite an interesting place to go and explore, I think. I'm hoping that for my daughter, that's different, but I suspect it's not as different as I would like it to be.
Not yet. Yeah. Yeah. We've come a long way, but we've still got a long road. I think the piece of this is around accurate self-assessment to me, being able to, you know, you said you've done a lot of work and you've had lots of, you've become quite self-aware, and I have too. I think it's part of becoming a coach. If you don't become more self-aware, there's something wrong there. Absolutely. If you're becoming a coach, but it happens. And that ability to accurately self-assess, I like to think of it as being able to sit on your own shoulder. And there was a really funny movie. It was Men in Black, and there was an alien creature. There was a guy, and then there was this miniature version of him that sort of whipped out from behind him and sat on his shoulder. So I kind of think about this as like you're sitting on your own shoulder, and you're watching, you're going through your day and you're doing your thing, but you're also watching yourself in action, and you're watching the impact that you're having on the people around you, and looking for so you can give that little, you know, observation person that's sitting on your shoulder a job. When I am in this, you know, meeting or this gathering with people, I want you to watch for how they are leaning in to what I'm saying, how they are drifting off, you know, the non-subtle verbal, non-verbal messages that people give, looking for those indicators of trust. So I like to give that little guy a job for my clients.
I love that. And I think it's one of the things when you're working with people, whether you're training a room full of people, whether you're running a webinar, whether you're working one-to-one or in small groups or whatever it is you're doing, it's one of the things that you don't particularly get taught on the train the trainer kind of courses, which is that just exactly that noticing what impact you're having on other people, where they're at all times, where they're at, you know, if they're just, you might be doing a beautifully, we were talking about TED Talks earlier, you know, you might do a beautiful presentation to a room full of people, but you have to have empathy with them and watch yourself through their eyes and notice what's going on. Otherwise, you might as well just write it on a bit of paper and hand it out. And that is about understanding yourself and being flexible enough to be able to do that. I think it is a skill to.
And women are wired for this. I mean, physiologically in our brains, we have this thing that connects the two hemispheres of the brain. And in women, it's thick. This is where all communication comes from, right? And how we communicate and how we do watch for those subtle signals. And in women, it's quite thick. And so, which is why, you know, women talk a whole lot more than men do, and why women have, you know, so many nonverbal signals. Men have quite a bit fewer.
I have to throw in just to make you laugh, really. I was doing some training once with a group of people, and they were from a publishing company, and they were all sat around the table, and we were talking, in actual fact, we were talking about presentations and getting the most out of PowerPoint and not just, you know, being ridiculous with it. And there was one guy, and he had a book, and he was concentrating on his book. And I could not believe this was happening, you know, and I was just like, I'm losing the room here because I've got one that's not even bothering to pay attention. And so we had this sort of little exercise that I'd set them, and I just kind of wandered around the room and wandered around behind him just to see what it was he was looking at. And he actually had an iPad that was inside the cover was like a cover of a book. And actually what he was doing was taking notes furiously. He was completely engaged in what we're doing. And I thought he was reading. So yeah, sometimes we need to read, just double check that the assumptions that we're making about what's going on. You know, sometimes people can look at you like this with just sort of a deadpan face. And that may be that they're thinking, you're an idiot. Or it may be they're thinking, wow, this is the most extraordinary thing I've ever heard in my life. Yeah. So we do need to check out our assumptions.
We do. Yeah, that's important as facilitators. I like the move you made of just subtly walking around behind him and kind of like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? I wasn't going to stand him out unless I was absolutely certain that he was doing what I thought he was doing. And quite right, he wasn't. He was really engaged.
So I have a question. And you know, people who are listening and people who come to talks and whatnot, they like to walk away with, you know, a handful of little nuggets, right? And so I'm wondering, what are the elements of trust for you? Like, what are the things that you think make up this thing that we call trust when we build it with others?
So I think it's very much context specific. I think we need to not think of trust as something that you can kind of paint on people and it's suddenly there. So we need to be really clear about the context that we're in. Who are we trying to build trust with? Why? It's back to what you said earlier about intention. Why are we trying to build trust there? It's fundamental to relationships, and the more trust you have, the closer that relationship is. But we also need to not force it. You know, there's no point in, it's like forced fun, isn't it? If you're forcing fun, then it's not fun. If you're forcing people to trust each other, you know, making them go up and build rafts together or whatever, if that's not their bag, then you can't force it like that. They just resent each other, resent you for making them do it. So being really clear about intention, being really clear about the context within which you're trying to build that, and understanding that you can't just do some sort of intervention and then we're all going to like each other, because that's just not how it works. How about you? What would you say are the elements?
Well, I think there's so many models out there. You know, Brené has a good one. David Meister has a good one. But I have one that has five elements. And I call it the five C's of trust. And the first one is around consistency. And what I mean by that is it's about your reliability. Like, do you deliver what you say you're going to deliver when you say you're going to deliver it? And can people kind of trust that you are going to, you know, not leave them hanging, for instance? The second C is competence. So do I believe that when you say you know something, or that this is the best way because you've done all the research, do I believe that you're competent in making that decision, for example? The third one is commitment. You know, some people like to focus on the passion that we have in our eyes and how we speak about what's really important, what deeply matters, the direction we're going. Like, can we speak and show our passion? And that's where that vulnerability piece, I think, ties in as well. The next one is connection. You know, are we focusing on creating these close, open, vulnerability-based connections with people that help other people feel psychologically safe around us and comfortable talking to us about hard things or difficult emotions. And then the last one is about care, and it's showing, it's building vulnerability-based trust by showing that you really do care, because you can imagine how it must feel to be them in this situation. So I think those five aspects, and we all, I think, have a preferred aspect that we start with. So as I was describing those five things, one of them might have popped up like, yeah, that's the one. And so if you're listening to this and you had that experience, so that's where you typically start. But I would invite you to explore all five of those aspects as a developmental practice.
Have you got, you've got that on your website, haven't you? Those five C's.
I do. Yes.
I saw that they were there and I deliberately didn't read them because I didn't want to
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to promote no. on this.
One of
this
the things podcast, though, so, I was thinking,
Andrew, cut that out.
No, don't. One of the things that I was thinking about is trust always about relationship? So there are certain people that I can think of that I would trust them to do something. I would trust them, you know, if they said they were going to do something, then I would know for certain that they were going to do it. But that I don't necessarily trust that they care about me as an individual. And so I'm wondering whether those five things are different under different circumstances. That's not necessarily a question that you can answer now, but I'm just...
Yeah. It may be that one of those things or one or more of those things is missing in the equation, right? So you may have, you know, super high reliability and super credibility, but the intimacy is gone or it's not built yet, right? So you don't quite have that whole picture of this person yet. So you're going to trust them with the things that are reliability and credibility related, but maybe not the intimacy. And so that to me says, start building the connection or the care piece.
Do we always need to though? Do we always need, are there people that we can have a relationship with that we aren't intimate with? Does it always matter?
Yeah. Yeah. Great question.
Context specific.
Yeah. That's a good reflection question to leave people with.
Leslie, I absolutely love this discussion. I love meeting you.
Oh, me too, great. Janet. It's been terrific. Yeah, it's been so great talking with you and really grateful to the team for putting us together. It was really magic.
Take care.
You too.
Someone recently told me that they started listening to the podcast and how they really trusted what our speakers were saying. This is so heartwarming to hear, and it's why we love doing it. And even better, when we hear two smart guests working through a complex topic so well. A massive thank you to both Janet and Leslie for their time and input. This was a fantastic episode. A massive thank you to both Janet and Leslie for their time and input. This was a superb episode. All their details are in the show notes, along with links to the subjects that they mentioned. Please do like and subscribe to the podcast. It really does make it easier for people to find us. Over half our audience are outside the UK now, so keep doing what you do to amplify women's voices. We've been recording a few episodes, and next time it's the challenges one. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.